Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 6th of Nisan. In just a minute, we'll get to a tshuva, a responsible of Rav Uziel, on the question of lending with collateral. It's really a discussion of a Talmudic sugya more than a particular response to a halachic issue that arose. It is in his book of response, in Shut Mishpatei Uziel, in Mishpatei Uziel, Volume 4, the Choshen Mishpat section, responsive number 21. And it's an explanation, as he puts in parentheses, of Choshen Mishpat, Siman Ayin Bet. So it has halachic ramifications for sure. It's from the 6th of Nisan of what he calls Chet Sadi Reish Ted. It's 1938, a year whose normal way of writing it would be Tav Reish Sadi, and then the Chet afterwards, which spells out a word that we don't like to do it. So in a situation like this, people turn around the letters to make different situations. But before I get into the technicalities of it, I do want to pause here, and I should have been doing this for a long time, and maybe I'll try to start doing it every single day. I want to start by thanking the OU for hosting this series, OU.org, and I want to thank particular Rabbi Jacob Abramowitz, who is my contact at the OU for these kinds of endeavors, and who I worked with on the Nachayomi Project, and David Hochhauser, who does us the great favor of putting these things online and giving it titles that you can find it if you're searching for it, and things like that. So I want to start with gratitude and with thanking them for their hard efforts and all these issues. Okay, and now we get to study this discussion. So he was actually responding to a question from his good friend, Rabbi Katriel Fischel Tchorsh, I think that's the way to pronounce it, who has a Wikipedia page. So if you look up Tchorsh in Hebrew, I think they give the English name too, but Tchorsh is Tav Kaf Vav Resh. You can find out more about him. He was a Rav in a neighborhood in Tel Aviv. For a long time, it was a European Rav who was a Zionist in the classical terms of it, a valuable, important Talmid Chacham who made Aliyah, who came to Israel and became a Rav, and they're having a discussion in Halacha. And the question starts with the following halachic facts. We have a halachic principle called a modeh b'miktzat. A modeh b'miktzat is somebody who, when is accused of owing somebody else money, partially admits to it. So a classic modeh b'miktzat would be the lender comes to a guy and says, you owe me $100. He has a couple of responses to that situation. He could say, I don't owe you anything, in various ways. So that's called a kofer bakol. So let's keep that term in our minds, because we're going to deal with it a lot. Kofer bakol is someone who completely denies that there's a loan, right? That's a kofer bakol. Or you could say, I owe you $50. Either you could say the original loan was only $50, or you could say, I already paid you back $50. Whatever it is, that's a modeh b'miktzat. That is somebody who admits part of the accusation or part of the claim, not the whole. That's a modeh b'miktzat. So in general terms, a modeh b'miktzat is required to take an oath about the rest. He pays the part that he admitted to, and he's required to take an oath, an oath on a biblical level, that he doesn't owe anything else. And then he's putter. But that's the discussion. The question here in this responsive is about a particular instance of modeh b'miktzat. The instance of modeh b'miktzat that we're talking about here, so the particular instance we're talking about here is a modeh b'miktzat in a mashkon. So modeh b'miktzat mashkon, so remember, a mashkon is collateral, sometimes either at the moment of the loan or later on in the process, and that's not our discussion today, so we won't get into it. The borrower will give some kind of collateral to the lender. The Gemara talks about a case where, this is above Metzia Lamed Hey, where the lender loses the mashkon, or it's the lender's fault the mashkon got lost. The lender is financially responsible for the collateral having been lost. So, in such a situation, the loan has not been repaid. That, in this case, everybody agrees to. But now the lender owes him the value of the collateral. So, if the borrower says, you lent me a sella, and it was worth two, right? So, basically, the guy who was originally the lender, the borrower is now the lender, really, because the collateral he's claiming, you owe me an extra sella. Whereas the original lender, who lost the collateral, says, it's not true. I lent you a sella, and it was only worth a sella. So in that case now, it's the original lender who is the kofer bakol. He's denying that he owes any money. So he's patur. The Gemara says, in a case where the borrower accepts or agrees, is willing to accept that the lender doesn't have the collateral anymore. Meaning, if the lender says, you know, your collateral got lost or disappeared or was stolen, so actually halakhically he is required to take an oath to that effect if the borrower insists on it. And in halakha, once you're taking an oath, then we can add on other oaths by the way. So the idea of taking an oath about the money and how much the mashkan was worth, stuff like that, that is something that could have been done by the way here if it was necessary. So Gemara says we're talking about a case where the borrower has agreed and has admitted and has accepted the fact that the collateral isn't around anymore. So that oath is gone away. We're talking about whether it could be, we could find there is a way that the original lender would be required to take an oath about how much he does or doesn't owe the borrower for the lost collateral. So it seems like, though, we're saying if the lender partially admits to it, he'll become a modeh b'mikzah, he'll become a partial admission and have to take an oath about the rest. And if he's a kofer b'kol, then he doesn't have to take an oath at all. So the Rav Tchorsh is asking Rav Uziel how that fits with the Gemara in Bava Kama. The Gemara in Bava Kama, Kuf Zayin Amar Aleph, had given as the reason that a kofer b'kol, somebody who denies an entire loan, is patur from even taking a shvua. You come to me and say, you owe me $100, and I say, I don't owe you anything. The Gemara gives a reason. The reason the Gemara gives for why my denying everything makes me patur, the Gemara says, chazaka ein adam me'iz b'pisnei pa'al chovo. Now, I would translate that for you, but in fact, it means literally, we have a chazaka, a general assumption that people are not willing to be brazen to the people to whom they owe things. So what that means is a matter of disagreement, meaning that there are three different options, is what the Rav Uziel says. There are three different explanations given for that in the commentators. Rashi says, "Ein adam me'iz for," it means that it's hard for a person, or in general, people are unable to be so brazen to those who have done them a favor. Hilka achecha dekafar b'kol patur. So if somebody comes up to me and says, "You owe me $100," and I say, "I don't owe you anything," what the halacha is telling us is that the halacha finds it odd or hard to imagine that when somebody lent me money and did me a favor, I would be able to so brazenly say, no, you didn't. Because if it wasn't true, I wouldn't be able to do that. So what happens with a modeh b'mikzah? What happens with a modeh b'mikzah is I really wanted to deny the whole thing, except that I couldn't because of this psychological element of you did me a favor, how could I deny the whole thing? And therefore, I convinced myself that I could deny part of it. And that is how it happens with modeh. That's Rashi's explanation. So Rashi's view, that's what happens between a kofer hakol and a modeh b'mikzah. In the classical case, we're going to have to come back to the collateral in a minute, but that's where we're starting to figure out how we get back to the collateral case and Rav Tchorsh's question. Second option that's given, or the second commentarial version of this is, Rabbi Tam seems to think that it's just a gzeret hakatuv. It's just, we get it from a pasuk. It's not really about a psychological subject about people. The gzeret hakatuv is that you need, before you can obligate somebody in a shvua, you need a kfirat hoda'ah. You need that the person is denying something that's there to be spoken about and sworn about. And when it became a kofer b'kol, when you deny everything, the pasuk says that's not a kfirat hoda'ah, that's not a kfirah, that's not a denial that leads to a oath, leads to a responsibility for an oath. So in Rabbeinu Tam's version, it's sort of pretty much divine fiat, scriptural fiat. It's that the pasuk says this is what we got to do. Okay? The third option is the Riva, another Balat Tosfot, says that the verse, he's talking to Rabbeinu Tam, basically, there in the same time, that the verse is both about a loan and a pikadon and something that somebody leaves with somebody else. And the Ein Adam Me'iz, so the Gemara has an Ein Adam Me'iz b'nei Baal Chovo, that the people aren't able or willing to speak brazenly to those to whom they own. But the Riva thought the Baal Chovo, it's not the fact they did them a favor, which is a Rashi had. It's not the fact they did them a favor that's the issue. It's that it's hard. People aren't brazen when they're talking to somebody who knows that they're lying. Right? It's not that you did me a favor that makes it hard. It's that you know that it's not true. So if you know that it's completely not true, I have a hard time to deny it fully and to just completely lie, and therefore I find a middle lie, as it were, and that's a modeh b'mikzah. So according to those three options, Rav Tchorsh was bothered and didn't understand the situation with the mashkon. So the Rav Tchorsh was bothered because when it comes to the collateral case that we had, right, I left a collateral with somebody and he lost it, and now we're disputing, we're arguing about how much that collateral is worth. So Rav Tchorsh says there's no kfirata. There's no kfirata ta'ana there. There's no denial of a claim. It's a dispute about the value of the collateral. So therefore, The fact that somebody is kofir bakol, there's no ha'aza there. It's not, you know, if I say that my collateral that I gave you was worth 2 sela and you say it was worth 1 sela, I'm not denying, I'm not being brazen in a lie or anything like that, because for Rashi, for example, you didn't do me any big favor by giving me the collateral, by taking my collateral, or the other way around. The guy who's now telling me that it's only worth 1 and I say it's worth 2, I didn't do him a big favor by giving him a collateral. The truth is, not only did I do him a favor, he mostly did me a favor. He lent me the money. So why would we apply the same principle that by denying everything, I prove the other person has, you know, by denying everything, in other words, by saying that the 1 sela that he lent me has been fully covered by the collateral that he's lost, he's not being brazen to me. Right, I gave him a letter so I could get a loan. So I think it was worth 2. He thinks it was worth 1. But there's no praise in this. So why would that principle apply? I mean, the Gemara applies the same standard of, well, if he's covered by coal, he doesn't need to take an oath. And if he's mowed and mixed it, he doesn't need to take an oath. But I don't understand. And also, says Rav Tchorish, even for Rabbeinu Tam, which says just a Gzeres HaKasuv, it's a scriptural decision, it seems like that scriptural decision was only set up in, right, with a Gzeret HaKatuv, we don't take those broadly. In a Gzeret HaKatuv, we take them for what they are. We can't expand Gzeret HaKatuv more than the Torah itself applied it, because it's Gzeret HaKatuv. It's the Torah's decision, not our decision. So Rav Tchorish says, but for Rabbeinu Tam, it would seem like the Torah's decision was about a situation of when we're arguing about the loan itself. But here we're not talking about the loan itself. There's no loan here. There was a collateral. So that's more like a general civil case of, I think the collateral was worth this, and you think the collateral was worth that, and we don't have a Gzeret HaKatuv about that. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, read the original Gzeret HaKatuv, so why are we applying it here? And then finally, to close off the question, even for the Riva, the Malveh doesn't really know the value of the collateral. The Gemara actually says, Malve lo kimle bigave, and that's why there's a whole other chain of what would or wouldn't be believed in situations, or why it is that we might think that the Love would believe the Malve about, for example, the fact that the collateral isn't there. Right, we just said, we're talking about a case where there's no other loan existing, and that's why we have to figure out we have to loan here, because if there's another loan existing, we could just tackle, another oath. If there was another oath that the lender already had to take, we could tack this oath onto it as well. So we're talking about a case where there is no other oath. Why is there no other oath? Because the lender, the borrower, believes the lender that the collateral isn't there. So the Gemara says, why does the borrower believe the lender that the collateral isn't there? Because the borrowers tend to believe lenders. If that's true, if the borrower is willing to believe the lender that the collateral isn't there, why doesn't he believe the lender about the value of the collateral? So the Gemara's answer is, because the borrower says, Malveh lo kimle bikaveh. The Malveh doesn't really know these things, because he took a collateral, and it's a collateral. Why does he know specifically the value of it? So if that's true, right, then there's no ha'aza here. There's no, for the Riva, the ha'aza was that I'm claiming something to a guy who knows better that I'm lying. But I'm not claiming anything on either side of the truth is. The borrower in this case isn't claiming to somebody who knows anything, because the Malveh doesn't really know. And the other way around, when the Malveh claims that he doesn't know anything because it was this, the Love knows that he doesn't really know what's going on. So it's not really the same claim. So how come these standards and these issues can be applied? So Rav Zil says it seems like a strong question, but after thinking about it, he thinks that there's responses to it. The responses are, since for Rashi, the whole Ta'ana extends from the original loan, and therefore, since it's all part of the original loan, so Rav Zil is really focusing on the fact that the borrower won't lie about it, right? So I hadn't read the original question that way, but that's the way, because the truth is, it's in the case of the Gemara, it's the lender who's got to figure out whether he owes money or not. But you could adjust the numbers and have it be the borrower. But the point is that it all extends from a loan. That's what Rav Uziel is saying. It all extends from the loan. It extends from the loan. The borrower has this gratitude, and therefore the borrower will not lie in this situation, because that will make him a kfui tov, will make him ungrateful for what was happening to him. So, and even more than that, the Malveh actually went a step further, because halachically, for reasons that we're not going to get into here, but halachically, the lender is considered a shomer sachar. He's considered to be somebody who's sort of getting paid for watching this collateral, and the payment that he's getting for watching the collateral means that it makes him a Shomer Sachar, right? And by being a Shomer Sachar, a paid watcher, he is therefore liable for more than just the ordinary case. He's liable for even onsin, even things that were beyond his power to control in terms of the destruction of this collateral. He's responsible for it. So that's really a double favor. Right? The original loan was a favor, and then his being able, willing to take on the risks of watching the collateral is sort of a double favor, and therefore you think all the more so that the borrower won't be meis and be and grateful in this way. Now remember, that means that he's understanding the question to be about why it is that we believe the borrower at all about the value, and why we apply the standards of kofar hakol or not, right? So that it's if the borrower says so. But in the case of the numbers of the Gemara, it's really the lender who's the question, but that's the way they're discussing it. And for the Riva, he says, when we say that the Malveh doesn't know the value of the loan, that's only a mistama. We don't always assume that he knows it, because we say that that the borrower doesn't necessarily have to believe him about the value of the loan. But it's possible that he went and he got an assessment of the value of the collateral, and the truth is, says Rav Uziel, that would be the general practice, because if you're going to accept the collateral, you want to be sure that the collateral has some relevance to the loan. If I lend you money, I want a collateral that meaningfully will compensate me if you don't repay the loan. And that's the way people do. They check the value of the collateral before they accept it as security for a loan. And therefore, we would say that the lender will not be so brazen as to make a claim about the value of this when the other guy knows that he's lying about it. And therefore, you can say that. And then for Beit Tam, just to round out the circles, you can say that the Gzeirat HaKatuv, the scriptural decree about this, was about everything having to do with the Malveh. Even though the terms, the words, were about specific parts of the Malveh, about the loan, really it would be about everything. That somebody who denies everything will be Patur, somebody who denies part of it will be chayav. So the truth is, all of this discussion, I want to say it, it wasn't clear to me in the responsum as I was reading it several times already, but all of this is about situations where it's the borrower who's denying things. Meaning, I say the loan's worth 100 and the collateral is worth 100, I'm denying everything. But if I say the loan is worth 100 and the collateral is worth 50, I'm denying half the loan, and therefore it applies to me. But that wasn't the instance that Rav Tchosh was pointing out. Rav Tchosh was actually pointing out the other instance where it's the Malveh who becomes a motive mix. So I don't know what happened in the conversation between them. It could be that Rav Tchosh wrote back and said, or discussed and said, I was asking the other question as to why we turn the Malveh into a modem mix as a kofar hakol. So some of Rav Uziel's answers work anyway. The answer about the Kedush HaKsasav certainly works anyway, right? For Rabbeinu Tam, that it's all a matter of a pasuk in scripture, that could apply also to the Malveh side. Certainly for the Riva, the question, somebody who knows that he's lying, that works as well, because the Malveh knows, the Lovah knows how much his collateral is worth. So that works as well for sure. For Rashi, it's a little bit more complicated, because it's not clear how the lender, the borrower, becomes the Baal Chovo. I think it would be that you could just say for Rashi that once the lender has lost a collateral and therefore owes money to the borrower, he's not willing to be meis for the favor maybe that he provided him the collateral as surety as to make him confident. Rav Uziel does not address these issues, but that would be, I think, the way to answer those questions, which are not the ones Rav Uziel quite brings up. Now, on the whole question of why a modem miksat should be chayav, a modem miksat should be liable, and somebody who admits to owing part of a loan or part of a claim should be liable, Rav Uziel says he thinks that's something mistaber, it's something very sensible and logical. It might be a pasuk too, but it's something very sensible and logical, because we think that the person isn't really saying, I don't owe you the other money. He's saying those words, but he doesn't mean to be saying those words. What he really means to do is to delay. Right? He's trying to find a delay until such point as which he can pay it back. Meaning, we don't think, Rav Uziel is suggesting that when the halacha is that a modem miksat has taken oath, it's because we don't think he's a complete liar and a complete thief and somebody just trying to get out of the other half. It's that we think that he wasn't able to deny it fully, psychologically or gzeiras kasav or whatever it is, and he didn't have it to pay, so he was trying to find a way in between, a way out, it was about finding a way to delay until such time as he could pay. So if that's true, then denying an actual loan or making a claim about the worth of a mashkon, it's all the same thing, right? So maybe that could be part of it as well. I mean, the one question is, why does kofar hakol work, or why does denying everything work the way that it does? That we discussed. And then if we're going to apply the whole concept of moda b'miksat, of admitting part of it, requiring an oath to... this case as well, so Rav Uziel says it makes sense, because our whole view of modem mixat, our whole idea of admitting something partially, is that it's really just a delaying tactic until somebody has the money to be able to pay it back. So all of that now, Rav Uziel says, that was all taking your question at face value, the way you had constructed the Rishonim. But in fact, he thinks that Rashi and Riva, he says, I think Rashi and Riva have the same shita. They really the same thing. That Rashi didn't mean anything as... psychological, I don't know what the right word is, as ketashifili, as that people can't turn their backs on people who did them a favor. He doesn't really mean that. What really Rashi really means is, says Rav Uziel, he says, because of the way Bava Kamma writes it. But in fact, Rashi really thinks that Ein Adam Me'iz is about, you can't lie to somebody who knows you're lying. It's not really about that they did you a favor. It's knowing that they're lying makes it hard. So let's believe the person making the claim then. If we say believe the person who makes the claim. Right? If we say that a mode of mixat, right, instead of him just taking an oath, let's say, let him take an oath, say, well, we now know that he couldn't say what he said. He wasn't able to say what he said. Well, he wasn't able to make issue a complete denial because psychologically he couldn't do it. So that should imply to us that the other guy's right. So the Shulta Giborim asked that question. The Shulta Giborim's answer was, Migo lehotzi lo amrinan. When we say, now, amigo lehotzi, would mean the fact that he has a better claim is not something we do. We don't, amigo is a situation where we believe somebody because if they were lying, they had a better lie to say. That comes up in lots and lots of cases of halacha. So here, amigo lehotzi, what we mean is, I can't just be, let's say I claim X, and I could have claimed a much better claim Y, so we'll say, well, believe me, that's true in terms of me not having to pay back certain things or not having to be liable for payment. But in order for me to get money from somebody else, that we don't say, that we don't allow. So here too, the Shulta Giborim says, we can't, just because we say we have a chazaka that in adam meiz davar b'nei bal chava, or in adam meiz b'nei misha yodea b'shikro, that we, the person who's being claimed against, can't get himself to deny everything. So that chazaka, if we try to say, and therefore, if I am the one making the claim, I should be believed because I'm making the claim and you weren't able to deny me completely, doesn't that show that my claim is right? So the Shulta Giborim says, he doesn't really mean amigo lehotzi because there's no migo here, but he means, but to these kinds of claims, we don't allow them to be so provable, we don't take them as such full proof that we'd allow me to get money from you for that. That's what Shulta Giborim had it. Rav Uziel for himself says, there's also another claim here that maybe should have helped the person making the claim, which is we have another chazaka, she'en adam b'toveya b'sheker b'davar she'chaviro makir b'shikro. The same thing that Rivas said about the borrower should be, so the same way that we're saying the Malveh can't say anything to the Loveh about the value of the Mashkon because he can't lie. The Riva had said, you can't lie to somebody who knows that you're lying. That should be true about the person making the claim. I come to you, I say, you owe me $100. Why don't we say, according to the Riva, and Rav Uziel already thought that Rashi agrees with the Riva, that if you know I'm lying, how can I make a claim to you? You know I'm lying. So why don't we say that and say, it must be the Toveya, the person making the claim is telling the truth, and he gets the money. So why do we believe the person who's being claimed against, not the person making the claim? So, and here there is no such thing as a Migo, right? There's no Migo here. So Rav Uziel says, the Shulta Giborim, there must be a Tot Sofrim, he says. And what Shulta Giborim meant was that the Chazaka Lahotzi Lo Amrinan. We don't say based on these kinds of assumptions about the way people work that we'll take money from other people. These assumptions help us in terms of if we're going to decide whether or not we can already be confident enough that somebody's lost a court case, but to help somebody win a court case so that they can get money from somebody else, that we don't say. Now, he says it's a Tot Sofrim, it's a mistake, a scribal mistake. I would have thought maybe that just the Shulta Giborim was using Migo Lahotzi, not meaning that here we have a Migo, but just pointing out to that concept of the case of Migo and saying it applies here as well. to the case of chazaka. So I think we're saying the same thing. I think Ruzil is just saying that the shilta gibor means that there are certain kinds of claims in halacha which might work to help people keep their money, and for us to say we haven't yet proven that they owe money, but we wouldn't apply those claims to cases where we're going to say, and that's good enough for us to decide that somebody else owes somebody money. I think that's what's going on here. But it's a little more complicated because there are cases where we have chazakos that at least help in terms of getting money from other people, or in terms of saying that they don't have to take a shavu at least. So Rav Uziel says, I'm not sure here, why wouldn't it be that the migo, that the this lender who lost the collateral, and therefore now it's the one who might owe money, so he says the collateral is worth, you know, the guy claims it was worth double what the loan was. He says, no, it was worth 1.5 times. I owe you X, whatever it is. So if that's true, he has a migo, because he could have lied and said it was worth the whole value of the, it was worth exactly the same as the value of the loan. So that's a migo if I could have denied the whole thing. And so we said, no, but you have Aiden other meis. I'm not brazen enough. And that gets rid of that migo and to obligate him in a shavua. But in the case of the lender, what about the chazaka? Why shouldn't the chazaka let him even say you have to pay money? Because we have that in other situations. We have other situations where a chazaka does that. Where's another situation that a chazaka lets us say that somebody actually owes money? It's not just that they're not going to have to, it's not just that they're not going to be potter completely, but they actually have to pay. So we have a chazaka, the ein sachir over al bal tigzol, that somebody who is owed a salary. So this is another case in halacha. Let's say I come to you and I say, I worked for you and you didn't pay me yet. And the other guy says, I'm not sure, I did pay you whatever it is. So why wouldn't we say that we do say that in general that claim is okay, unless the employer has some good reason to say no, he already paid. There's a whole discussion about that. So we have a chazaka there that I wouldn't come to you and just lie and steal from you. So why, says Rav Uziel, we should believe that even in the case of, we would say that, Rav Uziel says, except that we have countervailing chazakas on the owner's side. The owner has a presumption that, first of all, he would pay. So the story is that in case of employees, if the time hasn't come yet to be paid, we still do believe they weren't yet paid. But if the time has come to be paid already and gone by, so there we assume that the owner wouldn't violate the Torah's requirement that he pays his employees on time. And also, we have a chazaka that employees don't generally let employers be late in their payment. So without proof on either side, if the employee just says, you didn't pay me, and the employer says, I did pay you, part of the reason why we don't say, well, the employee wouldn't lie and steal and therefore require the owner to pay back, is that the owner has these countervailing presumptions. But if the owner didn't have countervailing presumptions, it looks like we would let our chazakos even take money out of lead to requiring the owner to pay the salary. So too, why wouldn't we say with a lender, when a lender comes and asks for money, we should say people don't tend generally ask for money unless they're really owed that money, and people don't generally lie to say that you owe me this and they don't. So why wouldn't we say that those are chazakos also, and they can at least countervail the me'iz chazaka and then lead to us taking out money and requiring the borrower to pay the money that's been claimed, even not with a shvua. So that's a question that he's raising. Another question he has in the Gemara. If we said that in a mode of a mixed case, that what's really going on is the guy's trying to buy time until he can pay the whole thing, it's odd because the Gemara says that in the case of Bonamix, the way the Gemara expresses itself is that really the guy wanted to deny everything, but he wasn't able to. But Rav Uziel says if the reason is he's trying to buy time, then it's not he wanted to deny everything. He really wanted to deny nothing. It's just that he wasn't able to pay back the whole thing and he's trying to buy time. So therefore, Rav Uziel says he thinks the whole issue of a chazaka of in Adam over al bal tigzal, the people don't transgress the prohibition against stealing, right, is not a general chazaka. It's not true that we let employees take money based on this general presumption that they wouldn't steal. It's that in the case of employers, we think employers are often so busy and have so much on their minds that they will forget things, and therefore we have a reason to believe that the employee is telling the truth. And that's the chazaka that's helping us out there. So that's a special case for Brazil. So basically, saying, in other words, we don't generally allow psychological presumptions about people, whether they lie or not, whether they'll make claims or not. All those kinds of psychological presumptions are not generally, like the Shulta Gibarim said, the kinds of things that allow us to take money from a person based on just the presumption. We need more proof in halacha than that. So the reason why it works with an employee, right? With an employee, it works where the employee comes and says, you didn't pay me yet. And we say, yes, it's true. He didn't pay him yet. That whole idea, says Rav Yisrael, is only because there's a halachic assumption that the owner, the employer, is so busy, he might make a mistake. But with borrowers and lenders, they're pretty much equal in the eyes of halacha before they came to court to claim about these things. And therefore, we can't allow our presumptions about them, even though they're valid in many ways, to lead to actually being the deciding factor in taking money one from the other. And that's why Rav Uziel thinks that actually what the Gemara means is that a modem mixes us. It's not that we think he's trying to buy time or that we think he meant to deny the whole thing. It's that we think he's seriously conflicted. He both would have loved to have been able to deny the whole thing, and he would have liked to have been able to buy time until he could pay back for a leave, meaning people both want to be good and they want to get out of things. And so Rav Uziel thinks that both of those are what's going on for this person, and that's why the Gemara expressed itself the way that it did. There's a little bit more in the tshuva. We'll stop here, a very little bit, a tiny little bit, but we'll stop here with having had an introduction and a reminder of issues that come up in terms of figuring out who's telling the truth and who's lying in various halakhic situations in terms of loans and matters that are owed by one person to the other, and how we in halakha decide who's telling the truth and who's not when there is no proof to be had. So that is a tshuva for the 6th of Nisan. Rav Uziel and Rav Tzkorsh having a discussion about modem mixes, about partial admissions and how they count in halakha. And I close again with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, to David Hachhauser for their help putting this together, and I hope you have enjoyed it as well. A responsive day for the 6th of Nisan. Have a great day.